This is On Being's Unheard Cuts. I'm Krista Tippett. You're listening to my unedited conversation with singer-songwriter Carrie Newcomer. I spoke with her on September 9th, 2014, from On Being on Loring Park. You can download the MP3 of our produced show with Carrie Newcomer at onbeing.org.
Well, thank you all for coming. How is everybody doing? My name's Trent Gillis. I'm the executive editor of On Being. How many of you have been here before? Oh, wow. Okay. Well, David, well, thank you for coming. About a year ago, we split off and started our own nonprofit organization, and we're at our year anniversary, and it's been a great year, and we love being down here in what we consider a cultural hub of Minneapolis, so thank you for coming. And part of what we love is being able to do events like this, and we do all types of events. We're also recording it, recording video. We're live streaming it. So if you want to watch it again, you can go back to onbeing.org. Also, you can tweet. Do we have a tweeting audience here? All right. But if you do want to, please just turn off the ringer on your phones, which I should check my own. Oh, I'm a culprit. We have two handles here for On Being. It's Being Tweets and Carrie Newcomer, at Carrie Newcomer. So the other thing is that I'd like to introduce you just to our staff that puts this together every time, because it does take a certain amount of effort with a lot of joy. So we have Chris Jones back there, who's our executive assistant and does a ton of coordinating. We have Mariah Helgeson, who's right here, as a digital producer and does all the video. Chris Hegel is back in our studio back there. If you haven't seen it, that's a recording studio where Krista records most of her interviews and does the scripting. We've got Maury, and Maury, I don't know your last name.
Jensen.
Maury Jensen, how Minnesotan, perfect. He's running the board tonight. And then we have this wonderful group of interns and volunteers that have come here. Megan, Josh, I think I saw over here. Becca is down here, and Sarah, who is a volunteer. So thank you all for coming. And with that, is there anything I left out, crew, that I should be mentioning?
Maybe if they want to have a cocktail
after the show. That's right.
They want to go to Third Bird.
Did anybody go to Third Bird beforehand or not?
Yep.
Okay, good. One of the things we're trying to do here with these events is try to grow community and also to connect people. That's part of our mission, and that's what we want to do. So when you come out of an event like this and you hear interesting things, that you can meet new people and talk about those ideas. So we welcome you to always walk down the alley. It's a beautiful little alley. And hope you come back again next time. So thank you.
I'm so happy to have all of you here, and you know, Trent and I have worked together for over 10 years. He's never introduced an event before, but now I'm going to have him do this every time because he did such a great job. You know, I didn't sit here today. I'm feeling like I need to, well, I guess I'm looking at you. I think I'm going to, is this okay? Is Chris back there? Is it okay if I move back a little bit?
You
want to
turn it over?
So this is informal, right? Like, you're in our home. There's nothing formal about this. We'll move the furniture around in the middle of the thing if we have to. Is that good?
Is it good?
Yeah.
Close as you can get.
Yeah, is that all right?
Yeah.
As close as I can get? Okay.
Great.
So, welcome to On Being on Loring Park. It's been so thrilling to create a hospitable physical space to be part of our hospitable media space. And it's so wonderful to have Carrie Newcomer here, who we've been crossing paths for years, but this is your christening and song of our new space.
And a wonderful space.
And so we're going to, I want to kind of confess up front that I'm not quite sure how to do this, because it's different. Well, because we're doing, it's a conversation, and I really do want you to sing some of your songs. And I'm not sure how much we should break the conversation up with song, and I think we should just experiment with it a little bit. And if you don't sing a lot, kind of while we're talking this first part, then what we may do is just launch into a few songs and kind of continue the conversation around, like have conversation in the center of things and then change to having song in the center of things. But I think we're gonna see how it works. And for that reason, I thought I might just tell you, so really this is total transparency, right? I don't believe in, when I'm interviewing somebody in person, which I don't always do, I'm often having somebody come in through headphones into my brain. I don't like to talk at all beforehand because things happen beforehand that then the audience wasn't part of. So I didn't want to do this beforehand. But, you know, some of the songs I love, and this is very personal, you know, every little bit of it. I love the first track on your new CD, and Visitation, Gathering of Spirits, from when I first discovered you, Bare to the Bone. So I'll just plant those, which is only slightly controlling.
Just so.
but I'll also say, and to me, those speak a lot to the. You know, this theme of the intimate link, as you put it, between creativity and spirituality. But also I want to say that as we're talking, if songs occur to you that you just feel that you want to burst forth in song, then this is also your moment to do that.
Okay.
So with all of that, you know, you're something of a celebrity in Quaker circles.
Well, I've never heard that before.
Yeah,
it's kind of a phrase that you don't usually see.
Right, I know. Yeah. But people often, I notice that journalists often refer to you as a Quaker singer. I wasn't sure of this until I started to delve into this, that you weren't raised Quaker. That wasn't the religious background of your childhood. So would you talk about what that was and how you came to this tradition?
Well, I was raised in northern Indiana. I'm a Hoosier, which impresses people everywhere.
As much as being a Quaker celebrity?
It's right up there.
Yeah.
Right up there. But my mom was raised Catholic. She's from a first-generation American from an Italian family. And my father was raised Methodist, but his family background was Mennonite, Amish. So I think I'm the only, like, Italian Amish person on the planet, I think, except my sisters. But other than that, it's just me. But I was kind of raised, in a basic Protestant Methodist church later on. But I think I was always the kind of kid that asks questions that make Sunday school teachers uncomfortable.
Right.
I think I've always been drawn to big questions and more comfortable with interesting questions than pat answers. So later on in my teenage years, I kind of discovered this idea of social justice being attached to the idea of faith, and that was a really powerful thing, and started reading Martin Luther King and Gandhi and Buber. I'm not sure I really understood it all, but, you know, I was fascinated by this idea of love made visible through these traditions. So, but kind of eventually, you know, I was doing a service semester for the college I was going to in Costa Rica, and I encountered the silent, unprogrammed Quakers there in Monteverde. And I kind of went to my first unprogrammed meeting. And
unprogrammed is a... it describes a certain kind of Quaker service.
Yeah, it's basically meditation. It's silent. Sometimes people will speak out of the silence, but only when they feel it's really important for the community. It's kind of like not like group therapy,
right?
But it felt like home. I felt like there's something really right about this. And people will ask me often, they say, you're a musician, you make your life in sound, and you go to a silent Quaker meeting, what's with that, you know? And, but it makes all the sense in the world that my best language has always come out of the silence.
But what strikes me when I hear your music, and also as I've been kind of reading you, is that Quakers, you know, yes, the obvious apparent thing at the center of Quaker tradition is the silence, but deeper than that, there's the virtue of listening and the virtue of questioning. I mean, that's the silence is partly there to give rise to those things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's not that you're just being silent, but that you are listening. You know, we you know, our lives are filled with sound, and they're filled with words, and taking those moments to listen, and what do we find when we listen and we take time to listen to something larger to us than ourselves, our own inner teacher, which can be very wise if we trust it. Mm-hmm. You know, so, it's about silence, but it's also really about listening.
So here's something, a sentence you wrote: music approaches the sacred through the wordless avenues of the heart. And I wonder, you know, how and when in your life did you discover music and discover that music does that?
Yeah, I love that about music, that, you know, music, going back to your question about spiritual tradition, I think, you know, I do sit with the silent Quakers, but I think my most consistent and deep spiritual practice has been songwriting, you know, mm-hmm. And I'm going to ask you again to repeat your question. Because,
well, I guess I'm kind of just trying to learn about your journey into being a musician.
And, okay.
But also, you know, if you can kind of trace for us, you know, not just how you realized that songwriting was something you do, but that it is a spiritual practice. I mean, is that something you knew right away when you were young, or is that some kind of knowledge that you grew into?
Yeah, the idea of putting into music and language the things that we experience that have no words. You know, that's a wonderful thing. And though when you say that's your profession, it's never on the drop-down menu. You know, you have to, like, go with other instead.
Right.
But, you know, I think I wasn't raised in a musical family, really. I lived in a little town in northern Indiana where all the band instruments were made at that time.
Where what? All the band instruments were made?
Band instruments were made there. You know, Selmer, Kahn, Armstrong, all these factories that made instruments were there. And so the public schools had a really wonderful music program. Hmm. Yes. And so I encountered music through the American public school system.
And you started playing the guitar?
Well, I started with flute, you know, but... Mm-hmm.
But I stopped with flute.
Yeah. You can't really sing with the flute, but so, and when I became a teenager, I fell in love with the singing poets. Mm. You know, those people who were...
Like who?
You know, the Joni Mitchell.
Oh, okay, right.
You know, Dylan, when I was feeling...
Leonard Cohen,
you know, all these people who were combining beautiful poetry and music, and I fell in love with that, so I picked up the guitar and, you know, and I learned my first three chords and wrote my first song, you know, immediately where they were intertwined, really. That idea of music being a spiritual practice, that kind of evolved, you know, because to be a songwriter, you know, I had to develop and practice some of the things that I think belong to the idea of spiritual practice. You know, I had to really start to practice presence. You can't write about it if you weren't there because you were too busy thinking about the next thing or what happened yesterday. You have to be present. You have to show up.
To whatever you're writing about.
To whatever you're writing about, and to your whole life, you know. Mm. I mean, I'm constantly taking notes. You can't write about your life if you've missed it. So the idea of presence, the idea of compassion and forgiveness, you know, that, you know, human story, we're so amazing. People, I mean, I just love people. I do. We're so interesting. We're interesting and we're inspiring and we're bewildering. But human story, there's something about that.
So, you know, what's coming to mind when you're saying that is Betty Steiner.
Ah.
And you know, it's a very wordy song, too.
Yes,
it's not a wordless
lots
space.
Lots of words.
But it's really wonderful, and I think it's kind of classic Carrie Newcomer, and I'm sure a lot of people here love it, too. So, I mean, I think, would you play Betty Steiner?
Oh,
and
sure.
Here's a question I have for you as a musician, especially because your lyrics are so important, and you've written lots of songs over the years. I mean, if I ask you to play something, will you remember all the words? And do you remember all the words of every song you've ever played over the last decades?
When you have a lot of songs trailing behind you, no.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Some songs I might have to dust them off a little bit.
Yeah. But not this one, probably.
But I think Betty's Diner. Betty's Diner, I think, came out of that love for people. I mean, I was traveling around and touring all over the country, and I think as a traveling folk singer, it's not like you're going from arena to arena. I mean, it's you see the world close up,
mm-hmm.
and you hear stories close up, and people tell me stories, and I love that. But I didn't know what to do with all that humanity, so I ended up writing this little song about Betty's Diner, about where community happens, you know, and where the spirit of goodness moves in the world. Miranda works the late night counter, a little joint called Betty's Diner, chrome and checkered tablecloths, and one steamy window pane. She got the job that shaky fall, and after hours she'll ride till dawn. With a nod and smile she serves them all. Here we are all in one place, the wants and wounds of the human race. Despair and hope sit face to face. When you come in from the cold, let her fill your cup with something kind, eggs and toast like bread and wine. She's heard it all, so she don't mind. Arthur lets his Earl Grey steep. Since April it's been hard to sleep. You know they tried most everything, but it took her in the end. Kevin tests new saxophones, but he swears he's leaving quality control for the Chicago scene or New Orleans, where they still play righteous horns. Here we are all in one place, the wants and wounds of the human race. Despair and hope sit face to face. When you come in from the cold, let her fill your cup with something kind, and toast like bread and wine. She's heard it all, so she don't mind. And Jack studies here after work to get past high school. He's the first. His big hands look comfortable with a hammer or a pen. And Emma leaned and kissed her his cheek. When she did, his knees got weak. Miranda smiles at him and winks. Here we are all in one place, the wants and wounds of the human race. Despair and hope
hope sit face to face when you come in from the cold. Let it fill your cup with something kind. Eggs and toast like bread and wine. She's heard it all, so she don't mind. You'll never know who'll be your witness. You never know who grants forgiveness. Look to heaven or sit with us. Deidre bites her lip and frowns. She works a stop and go downtown. She...
Did it happen?
It happened.
It's a lot of words.
Deidre bites her lip and frowns. She works a stop and go downtown. She's pretty good at the crossword page, and she paints her eyes blue-black. Tristan comes along sometimes, small for his age, and he's barely five, but she loves him like a mama lion. And Beta used to drink a lot, almost lost it all before she stopped. Comes in at night with her friend Mike, who runs the crisis line. Michael toured Saigon and back, hair the color of smoke and ash. Their heads are bowed, their hands are clasped. One more storm has passed, here we are all in one place. The wants and wounds of the human race, despair and hope sit face to face. When you come in from the cold, let it fill your cup with something kind. Eggs and toast like bread and wine. She's heard it all, so she don't mind.
Thank you. It's so beautiful. And you know, this phrase of yours that I love, the intimate link between creativity and spirituality, is beautiful, but it's embodied spirituality. Right? That's what you do. It's that, it's humanity with all its mess and its edges and, as you say, it's bewilderment and beauty.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think... that love for people, that love for our stories, you know, it's been very motivating for me. I just love people.
What?
I just love people. I know that's so unfashionable to say, you know, but I do.
Well, I don't know if it... Yeah, it doesn't make headlines.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's as rare as it feels.
No, I don't think it is.
Because it doesn't
either.
Make headlines.
Well, I think, you know, I think one of the things about doing the kind of music I do that really honors the story, the human story. Also, you know, I write a lot about finding something extraordinary in an ordinary day, maybe even something sacred in an ordinary day. And I think about that a lot, and I write about it a lot. I think there's a longing out there for that kind of acknowledgement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that our lives, our daily lives, are they're wondrous, and they're valuable, and they're honorable.
Hmm.
You know, the smallest things, you know. So I write about that a lot.
There's one of your poems in this collection of poetry, which I think is your first... It's
yes.
The first time you published a collection of poetry.
It is.
I really love these lines from this poem, Why We Are Here. Maybe this is why we are here, to rub shoulders and play cards, to be a place to launch and a place to land, to murmur in the phone late at night and to say, this I love and this I saw.
To bear witness to one another. Mm. Yeah.
And I think that is that finding something sacred in things that are very ordinary, routine even. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think something really good happened to my songwriting when I gave myself permission to really honor my ordinary, my daily life. You know, something good happened to my songwriting when I gave myself permission to sound like a Hoosier.
You know, which I think we have to translate. Everybody won't know that. That's someone from
Indiana. And that there's, I'm never going to sound like someone who grew up on the island of Manhattan, but that's kind of okay. There's a lot of people to cover that voice, mm-hmm. and I'm not really, really concerned it's not going to get covered. But my most powerful voice, my most potent voice, would always be my truest voice. Mm-hmm. And writing about those daily experiences.
You're also funny, I have to say. You're kind of a philosopher.
I do kind of see the world kind of in this sideways sort of fashion. So
I here's a list. I think this is on your Tumblr page. Things I never imagined I'd say. It's a great, great, big, long list, but here's some of the ones I like the most. Things I never imagined I'd say. Let's throw some tofu on the grill. I miss gathering with friends to listen to both sides of a new album. Mile-wide tornadoes happen regularly. That's not really funny, but it is bizarre. The most intelligent news on television is presented by late-night comedians, and they ended the space program.
Yes. I kind of put that up the other day. My dog has 5 sweaters. I mean, things that I never thought I would say in my life. You know, despite all my mistakes, she turned out just fine.
Yeah.
It was... Yeah, kind of a long laundry list.
It was a long list, yeah. It was a good one. Let's see the other one. Oh, where is that? Oh, I don't know. What would you say? I think this was, I'm not sure if this was you or a quote, the glass is not half full or half empty, it's just a big glass. I really like that. I'm going to keep pondering that.
It's just a big glass. Yeah.
Oh, the telephone is ringing. It's a real experience. It's probably a...
It's not my cell phone, right?
Probably a sales call. We get those on this line. Here's something else you've said that I'd love for you to tease out for us. The source of all things is the finest and first artist. I mean, there's a piece of theology in there. You're not using the word God, which is fine, but I mean, when we talk about God anyway, in the most traditional context, we use metaphor, God as father, God as judge. I love God as artist, or the source of all things as artist. And it really is, as I said, it's a piece of theology.
Yeah, I've always... I've always had a spiritual current to my work. It's interesting because I cross secular spiritual lines daily. Mm-hmm. Some people come to spiritual music and creating spiritual music through the church, and some of us come through the bars. It's a different way, of getting there. But that idea that there is something shining in the world. There's something shimmering just below the surface of things always. The light in the world is being an artist, is being creative, curious. I think curiosity is another way of talking about creativity. Sometimes when you talk about creativity, people go, oh, that's just for artists, and it's not for me because, I'm an accountant, But... But that idea of curiosity, of question, and asking questions again, and sensing that something just shimmering below the surface of things and going, wow, what is that? Mm.
I wonder if... It seems to me this song that's the first song on your new CD, Every Little Bit of It.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great line in it. I thought I knew the question, but I guess not. I mean, I really like that, too, that finding better questions is a sacred act. Do you want to sing that one?
Sure, I could sing.
I mean, I think that song touches on a lot of the things we're talking about. Does it? Does it touch on that?
I think so, yeah. I think it does. Yeah, and a lot of this song, there was a sections of this song that came out of conversation I was having with a mutual friend, Parker Palmer. Mm-hmm.
Another celebrity Quaker. In fact, you two may be it.
I'm going to tell him you said so. I've really loved and enjoyed working with Parker, and some of our conversations have become songs. I'm turning on my guitar here. All right. Start again.
Okay. It's just like your living room, too.
Yeah.
Just beyond my sight, something that I cannot see. I've been circling round a thought that's been circling round me, and like the vapor of a song that is just out of earshot. I thought I knew the question, but I guess not. And there it is, just below the surface of things, in a flash of blue and the turning of wings. I drain the glass, drink it down every moment. Every little bit of it, every little bit. I swam against the tide, I tripped on my own pride. So I'll try again today to get out of my own way. The face was always in the stone, said Michelangelo. You just have to chip and clear to see what is already there. There it is, just below the surface of things, in a flash of blue and the turning of wings. I drain the glass, drink it down every moment of this, every so we keep transcribing. There it is, just below the surface of things, in a flash of blue and the turning of wings. I drain the glass, drink it down every moment of this, every little bit of it, every little bit. Every little bit of this, every little bit.
I'm curious if you remember the conversation you had with Parker that turned into that song.
Well, it was actually a series of conversations. You know, we were talking about, well, the thing that shines below the surface of everything, the curious promise of limited time.
Yes.
You know, that,
that's a wonderful line.
Thank you. That idea that we're here right now in this moment, in this collection of elements, this particular combination of stardust stuff has never happened before, just like this. And here we are, with a wave that comes up out of the ocean, and we'll eventually come back into the ocean. But while we're up there, oh, what a shining moment it is. And when you know that time is limited, it makes everything a little more poignant, a little more powerful. Hmm. You want to show up for it. You don't want to miss it, every little bit of it, you know?
I wonder if, the word light is a word you use a lot. I wonder if you know that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not that a lot of people use. I mean, it's a very important metaphor and image, and it's not that you're the only one who used it, but it really did jump out at me. You know, the geography of light is this very evocative name for. You had an album that you named
Geography of Light.
Mm-hmm. Shaft of Light, Shift of Light, Quality of Light, Heart of Light. It was just, you know, this is just me reading a few pages. Source of Light, Something Made Holy of Light. Can you talk a little bit about that? And I don't know if you can, because actually it is metaphor.
It is metaphor. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there were several poems in the new book, and the new book is fun. It's my first book, it was fun to put it out for many reasons. But one, because a lot of my songs start with poetry or essays. You know, if you lined up 11 songwriters and you asked them their process, they'd have 11 different ways that they go about doing it. But mine usually starts with a poem or an essay, exploring the idea that way, and then it goes into song. But the idea of light, yes, I think writers have themes that they keep coming back to, things that keep fascinating them, and you try to describe it in different ways, but it keeps calling you back. And
I'm just wondering if you can put words around what it is about light that keeps calling you.
Ah, that's a great question. Yeah. You ask really good questions. No one's ever asked me that before.
I also understand that it's a hard one because
it's
almost so... It's so natural and kind of instinctive to the way you think that I realize it may not be something that you're articulate about. I mean, you're articulate about it in various ways, but it comes up. But I'm just wondering if you think about it kind of head on.
Well, I've always liked in the Quaker tradition that sometimes God is referred to, or whatever the larger is referred to as the light, and that really resonated for me. Yes, and the world is shadow and light, but I just keep leaning into the light. I keep writing about it. I keep trying to describe it. It's there. It's in my life every day. You know that, and I guess it's part of that wordless, trying to put the wordless into language. You know, what is that? And we all experience that, you know, that what is that that happens when you see a sunset and your heart becomes too big for your chest, or the first time you see your baby in your arms and you know, time expands out in all directions from that child, you know. And I, you know, what is it, you know, when you see that first red leaf of autumn and it's bittersweet. Oh, the summer is gone. Mm. And it's so incredibly exciting at the same time. What is that? You know, so I see it and I sense it every day. I see it in people all the time. And maybe that's why I keep writing about it. Because I'm not sure exactly what it is.
Yeah.
I just know it's there.
Yes, and I think the autumn analogy also gets at something I sense behind it. Because I think it's also a presence to darkness, right? Like being attentive to light.
Yes.
Because you're attentive to the shadows.
Yeah, it is. It's all shadow and light, you know. It's all of it. And you know, we learn from the shadows. We experience them. It's in the, I mean, you know, there's a lot of sorrows in this world. And maybe that's part of how I negotiate that. You know, I think when you're sensitive to the to the sorrows of this world, and you've experienced shadows in your own life, that you know, you can do different things with it. You can despair, you can shut down, or you kind of lean into the light. You know, without denying or, you know, placing in a compartment or making small this idea of shadow. It's just there. It's life. It's all of it. It's mm-hmm. all of the above. But kind of choosing to lean into something.
Mm-hmm. I like the way you're just using the word lean to the light. And it's so different from lean in. Sheryl Sandberg.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. No, I like it. I think we need to redeem the word of leaning in. So thank you for that. Not that I am against what she wrote about. I just think it's too important a phrase.
Yeah,
that's a very
inclining.
Yeah, that is a very redemptive way of thinking about. You know, the song that occurs to me is "Bare to the Bone," which I think when I first discovered you, I think it may have been. Kind of really hard years in getting this project up and, you know, established, and that feeling of, I think I really identified with that. And that's about, and to me that's about, yes, I mean, struggling with something like, you know, depression, which I have gone through, or, you know, these really bad things that happen to us. But also I think that song is about how kind of day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month, year-to-year, struggle is also kind of woven into the things that are right.
Yes.
Right? It just is. And, you know, there's something about leaning into that, too, which is hard.
Yeah, Bare to the Bone, you know, was written. You know, there's some songs that land, you know, that there's songs that you hone on for a long time. Betty's Diner was a project, you know. It was notes taken on the road. It was a short story.
Right.
And now it's a play, actually. I've written a play with Richard Thomas, and it'll be produced at Purdue University in 2015. But some things you hone on for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then once in every great while, a song comes all... It's already done. It's completed. You just kind of get out of the way. And Bare to the Bone was like that. I sat down in my, you know, space where I like to write, and it came out in a half an hour.
Really?
Yeah.
Would you sing that one?
Sure. I wish there were more of those.
Yeah.
But it's only once in a great while. But yeah, that idea of struggle being part of it. Oops, hang on here. it's a simple song, really. You know,
You know,
it's interesting. You know, musically, I think something also good happened to my music when I stopped being afraid to do something, to present it simply, because I was afraid that people would think I couldn't do it in a complex way. Mm-hmm. There's kind of like a simplicity on the other side of complexity. You know, there's a simplicity that happens when you just don't know what else to do, and it can be a little raw and it can be real honest, you know. And then there's the simplicity that happens because it's the best way to say it. You know, it's not about how many notes, but you just want the right ones. You know, so here I am without a message. Here I stand with empty hands, just a spirit tired of wandering like a stranger in this land. Walking wide-eyed through this world is the only way I've known. Wrapped in hope and good intention and bare to the bone. There is nothing I won't show you, nothing I can hide. I've risked it all and dreamt it all, seldom question why. You took me in when I was hungry, when my spirit ached and groaned, laid wide open and defenseless and bare to the bone. So when I rise in glory. If I do by grace. Time will wash away these footprints and will leave without a trace. Between here and now and forever is such precious little time. What we do in love and kindness is all we ever leave behind. When the light is slowly fading and my eyes softly waiting, and the evening sun is setting and the world is barely breathing, then your voice can call me and your hands can lead me home, like a newborn, awed and naked and bare to the bone. So when I rise in glory. If I do by grace. Time will wash away these footprints and we'll leave without a trace. Between here and now and forever is such precious little time. What we do in love and kindness is what we really leave behind. Here I am without a message. Here I stand with empty hands, just a spirit tired of wandering like a stranger in this land. Walking wide-eyed through this world is the only way I've known. Wrapped in hope and good intention and bare to the bone. Wrapped in hope and good intention and bare to the bone.
That's very moving for me to listen to, because it really did. The way a song, you know, a song that accompanied you through an experience can just be part of that experience and that place in you where it lives.
For me, too. Yeah. In terms of songs and performing songs and continuing to present songs.
You know, yeah.
They're part of that experience for me. But it's also amazing. I always feel very grateful when people let me know. I mean, songwriters, you know, we kind of send our songs in the world and we just hope they land well, you know. And when someone tells me it landed well and safely mm-hmm. with them, it's quite a gift. Mm-hmm. And I'm always very grateful mm-hmm. when I hear that.
So some journalist from Boston called you a prairie mystic. I just have to say that they're from Boston. And, you know, I've been around a lot of people lately who have been using the word prophet. Mm-hmm. And I love the not just the language of the mystic, but the idea. And I love you using it. Because you mm-hmm. also, people have called you, but you use the word mystic. You were... When you write about people, you know, somebody who's a carpenter, a mystic, and a poet, mm. you know. Mm. And I wonder if you'd say a little bit about how you think about mystics among us or who the mystics are among us. What are the qualities of that? You don't have to be describing yourself. I mean, I think one quality of a mystic is that they wouldn't call themselves a mystic,
yeah,
right? So I'm not
much.
Asking you what it means for you to be a mystic.
Because I'd have to go, huh?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's always amazing to meet those people and have those people in our lives, you know. And I think that's a little bit what Betty's Diner was about, you know. That,
yeah, right.
That they're, These incredible souls, these spirits are all around us. The piece I think that you were quoting from was about a fellow in my Quaker meeting who's recently passed away, but in his 90s, and he was just one of these incredible people that just could not get the world close enough. He just was this incredible character, and he would talk about the natural world in ways that really honored that shining something that was present in it. And I felt he was a mystic. He would never say that.
Yeah, that's
of course not.
That's proof of,
part of the,
that
part
it
of
might
the,
be true.
Part of the deal, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah.
But I love that. I love that when I meet folks like that, and I could just start rattling them off, you know, if you want. But then they go. Carrie.
Yeah.
Why did you say that?
Yeah.
But, you know.
There's this, there's an analogy that somebody offered me, and it was the earliest days of the show. It was such a long time ago that we don't even have a transcript of the conversation. But I've never forgotten it. It was a scientist, a geneticist, who's also an Anglican priest, and he said that he thought
the show. I'm sorry,
Lyndon Eaves. Do you remember that?
It was a great show.
Yeah, I know, and we can't. Even, we don't even still have the. So yeah, it was such a long time ago. It's very defining for me, kind of like for you. I mean, you say. I mean, it takes me back to all this learning. But he said that the spirituality of a scientist is like the spirituality of a mystic, which is to say, you know, always. Defining and asserting truth as best as you can articulate it in this moment, but always living in the expectation, always taking delight in what you do not yet, cannot yet know, and living in the expectation of better discoveries to come.
Yes, that's it. He said it. That idea of living in the expectation, to live in the question, mm-hmm. and to be comfortable there. To live in the question,
yeah.
You know, and in the wonder of it, the wonder of the question. I like the word wonder. Mm-hmm. You know, I wonder.
I think, though, sometimes, and I think this is true for religious doctrine, maybe that sometimes living in the wonder. Is in a tension, can be a creative tension, but in a tension with the certainties. And mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, that was his point, that is actually a holy tension, a sacred tension.
I think it is. Though something happens, I have a song called I Believe that mm-hmm. that came about because I was asked to sing in a church service. In this particular church service, at one point the people stood and they recited a creed together as a community.
They weren't Quakers.
They were Quakers because they kind of don't say anything. So But I got to thinking about it, that there is something powerful, not when it's said without thought, but of what you're actually saying, but when you do say something out loud that's important to you, I love you, and you mean it, or if you need me, I will be there. When you say it out loud, this I love, something shifts, something changes a little bit. So there is that thing of what is it I believe? What is it that I think is true, at least now, as close as I can find and articulate?
Yeah, I think there's something deeply human and essential about that.
Yeah.
Even for the most deeply, constantly questioning of us.
I think so. It can get kind of... The edges can get soft.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's no place to put your feet. So... it is good to also kind of take assessment and say, but this much I know is true, at least for now.
Do you want to sing that I Believe song?
I don't think
I've heard that one.
This was
so I'm relinquishing control here.
Well, this song came about. I was traveling in India. And I met, I had the wonderful opportunity of meeting and then getting to create an album with Amjad Ali Khan and his two sons, Ayan and Aman, Classical Indian Sarod, which is the first thing you think of putting together, an Indiana folk singer and Indian classical Sarod.
Yeah.
Immediately go, that would work.
That's right.
But I wrote a collection of songs for that collaboration. It was really an honor to work with him. And this was written in that time period and for that collaboration. Oops, let me tune it just a little bit. I could play it out of tune, but, you know, everyone would cringe for 3 minutes, and that's just not pleasant. I believe there are some debts that we can never repay. And I believe there are some words that we can never unsay. And I don't know a single soul who didn't get lost along the way. And I believe in socks and gloves knit out of soft gray wool, and that there's a place in heaven for those who teach in public school. And I know I get some things right, but mostly I'm a fool. I believe in a good strong cup of ginger tea, and that all these shoots and roots will become a tree. All I know is I can't help but see all of this as so very holy. And I believe in jars of jelly put up by careful hands. And I believe most folks are doing just about the best they can. And I know there are some things that I will never understand. I believe there's healing in the sound of your voice, and that a summer tomato is a cause to rejoice, and that following a song was never really a choice, never really.
mercy again. And I believe in the kindness of strangers and the comfort of old friends. And when I close my eyes to sleep at night, that it's good to say amen. And I believe that life's comprised of smiles and sniffles and tears. And in an old coat that's due has another good year. And I know that I get scared sometimes, but all I need is here. I believe in a good strong cup of ginger tea, and that all these shoots and roots will become a tree. All I know is I can't help but see all of this as so very holy. I believe. I believe. I believe. I
great. I'm really glad you played that.
Thank you. It seems to fit with what we're talking
about.
Yes,
it did. There's something that you wrote. This is in your book, and I may just read a little bit of this and maybe ask you to read the rest of it, or then you read it yourself, but I want to read it just because I love these words. Three gratitudes. Now, it's a wonderful poem, but I also just find this idea so useful. I want to start doing this myself. And here's how it starts. Every night before I go to sleep, I say out loud three things that I am grateful for. All the significant, insignificant, extraordinary, ordinary stuff of my life. It's a small practice and humble, and yet I find I sleep better holding what lightens and softens my heart. Such a great practice.
Thank you. My friend Marcia told me that she was doing this, and I thought, what a lovely idea.
Yeah.
And I started doing it, and it's true. It was like just saying out loud three things. You know, and sometimes it would be big things, and sometimes it would be little things, and then sometimes I'd get on a roll and I just couldn't stop, and
you do it even on the days that were hard.
Yeah, and then yes, I would, mm-hmm. and that would change something,
mm-hmm.
to end my day that way. And when I get on a roll, then my husband would sometimes chime in, don't forget the dog.
Right.
He's not doing the practice quite yet, but he will chime in. I won't forget the dog.
There's some really interesting science now about, and it's not that different from this. I mean, it's just about asking people in a study to once a week or once a day make a list of things they're grateful for. Very routine.
Mm-hmm.
And it improves their health. And yeah, they sleep better. They're more at peace. It's so amazing.
These are, they seem like simple practices, that idea of gratitude. I love that. That it really does make a difference. It changes us.
Mm-hmm.
When we say it out loud, when we embody it, this idea of gratitude. Kindness is another
yeah.
idea like that. I think we talk about love a lot, and I think love can get really big. Love gets like, you can't almost get your arms around it. It's such a big thing.
Yeah.
But kindness is like the country cousin to love. it kind of does dishes when no one asked it to. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
And I love that, you know. And I try in some ways that the songs that I write would have a bit of that feeling to them, that just a sense of kindness about them. That's the hope, anyways.
Mm-hmm. You want to read that poem?
Sure.
The whole thing, the three gratitudes.
Three gratitudes. This is related to a song called Thank You and Good Night, which was originally called The Evolution of a Prayer, which I figured could maybe offend everyone in one fell swoop. But so I... Quakerly of me.
Did the poem come first or the song?
The poem came
okay.
first. Mm-hmm. Every night before I go to sleep, I say out loud three things that I'm grateful for. All the significant, insignificant, extraordinary, ordinary stuff of my life. It's a small practice and humble, and yet I find I sleep better holding what lightens and softens my life ever so briefly at the end of the day. Sunlight and blueberries, good dogs and wool socks, a fine rain, a good friend, fresh basil and wild phlox, my father's good health, my daughter's new job, the song that always makes me cry, always at the same part, no matter how many times I hear it. Decent coffee at the airport, and your quiet breathing. The story she told me, the frost patterns on the windows, English horns and banjos, wood thrush and June bugs, the smooth, glassy calm of the morning pond. An old coat, a new poem, my library card. And that my car keeps running despite all the miles. And after three things, more often than not, I get on a roll and I just keep on going. I keep naming and listing until I lie grinning, blankets pulled up to my chin, awash with wonder at the sweetness of it all.
You wrote... or said, my best prayers are songs, always have been.
Yeah.
And I wondered if you might sing us a song that is a prayer.
Well, they're all kind of... Mm-hmm. They're all kind of like...
Yeah,
that.
Okay. Well, what feels more like the prayer you would pray today?
Well, Bare the Bone is definitely one that came out as a prayer. But I already did that.
Is Gathering of Spirits a prayer?
Yeah, I was kind of tuning up. It came out like a prayer, too.
I'm not trying to control things, though, whatever. I said you could choose.
But I know the songs that you're it'd be really hard if the song, you know, that I didn't write or didn't know or something. Yeah. Let it go, my love, my truest. Let it sail on silver wings. Oops, hang on. I'm going to start that again. Let it go, my love, my truest. Let it sail on silver wings. Life's a twinkling, that's for certain, but it's such a fine thing. There's a gathering of spirits, there's a best of all our friends, and we'll take up where we left off when we all meet again. I can't explain it.
couldn't if I tried. How the only things we carry are the things we hold inside, like a day in the open, like the love we won't forget, like the laughter that we started and it hasn't died down yet. Oh, let it go, my love, my truest, let it sail on silver wings. Life's a twinkling, that's for certain, but it's such a fine thing. There's a gathering of spirits, there's a best of all our friends, and we'll take up where we left off when we all meet again. Oh yeah, now didn't we? Don't we make it shine? Aren't we standing in the center of something rare and fine? Some glow like embers, like light through colored glass, and some give it all in one great flame, throwing kisses as they pass. Oh, let it go, my love, my truest, let it sail on silver wings. Life's a twinkling, that's for certain, but it's such a fine thing. There's a gathering of spirits, there's a best of all our friends, and we'll take up where we left off when we all meet again. Just east of Eden, but there's heaven in our nest, and we're never really all that far from those we love, and there's weight out in the water. There's a glory all round, and the wisest say there's a thousand ways to kneel and kiss the ground. Oh, let it go, my love, my truest, let it sail on silver wings. Life's a twinkling, that's for certain, but it's such a fine thing. There's a gathering of spirits, there's a best of all our friends, and we'll take up where we left off when we all meet again. And we'll take up where we left off when we all meet again.
So I think for the next 10 minutes or so, 10, 15 minutes, I'd just love to have you play a couple songs that mean something to you right now, maybe some things from the new album, CD, whatever we say now, collection of music.
Yes. Sure.
What does that do, by the way? I'm curious.
I'm in this privileged position now that I get to both request my favorite songs and ask questions.
it makes the tuner work and not work, and it mutes the guitar when I'm doing things that you just don't really want to go out on the speakers.
Good to know.
Yeah. So this is on the new one, and it's kind of about hope in a way, and thresholds. And there's a lot on this new album about thresholds. We're always coming up to new thresholds.
That's such a great word too. I love that word, thresholds.
I do.
Yeah.
And we keep arriving at them, you know. And but at a threshold, there's often a moment where what is old has passed away, but the new hasn't quite arrived yet. So you stand there at the doorway, you know.
Don't you think we're at a huge, gigantic threshold as a planet right now?
I think
so. Collectively, we have thresholds in everything we do right now. Nothing works the way it used to, and we don't know how we're going to make it. We don't know what new forms we have to invent to take us into the 21st century.
Yes, and all the more important that we remember to be kind.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we're all kind of figuring it out right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, that idea, and I think I really sense that everywhere I go, too. I think there is this longing out there, you know, that longing, and sometimes not even sure what exactly the longing's about just yet. Yeah. It's kind of like that light off in the distance, in the window. Looking out at the night beyond the driver's wheel, curving hips made of snow in the winter fields. There's a house set way back where the lamplight glows like a star out in the cold, filled with people I'll never know, who left a light in the window. What would I change if the choice were mine? I was doing the best I knew at the time. And every door that was opened and door that closed, all the things that made me grow, set me off down another road, off to look for a light in the window. The new is too new to be born today. So I'm throwing out seeds on the winter snow as the cold wind begins to blow. Standing here on a new threshold, I can see a light, there's a light in the window. From mystery to mystery, so I won't lie. I don't know what happens when people die, but I hope that I see you walking slow, smiling wide as the sunrise grows. Drop my map with a thousand folds, in the distance I see it glow. There's a light, there's a light, there's a light in the window.
It's that light again.
There it is again. It does fascinate me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this one actually, I listened to this great interview that you did with Vincent Harding.
Oh yeah, who just died this year.
And what a beautiful interview that was. And he was talking about people singing together.
Yes.
The importance of people singing together.
How in the 60s, how the civil rights movement sang the way to freedom.
It was just it's a beautiful interview. Yeah. And I was very touched by it. And he kind of challenged, though, a little bit at the end, like, you know, we need those. We need more.
Yeah.
We need the new ones that people are writing today. And I thought, yeah, well, I'm a songwriter.
Yeah, no, and I don't want to ask you about that. And I talked to the Indigo Girls last summer, mm-hmm. and Amy Ray in particular. She's very, very oriented towards social justice. And I asked them, and this was on my list of questions we didn't get to. You know, she said, this is something I'm thinking about, and I think songwriters are thinking about. You know, where's the Pete Seeger? And their music was so central
yes.
to all of that ferment a few decades ago. And you're kind of now walking into that tradition, right? Wanting to take it seriously and find a voice in it.
Yes, and it's an interesting it's really an art form. It's a challenge to write a song that people can sing immediately the first time they hear it.
Yeah.
That's not an easy thing to do.
Right. Well, and the other thing that they got people doing, and the spirituals, of course, did this,
yes.
right? Which is what
call
the
response.
Civil rights are. Yeah. But it's also what getting a whole group of people singing,
yes.
or a demonstration full of people singing, and something that people can pick up collectively like that.
And it shifts. You know, I'm a folk singer, you know. I'm a gal with a guitar, so I've always been called a folk singer. But I didn't do a lot of sing-alongs. I sung, you know, but in the last few years, I've really been moved by what happens to people when they sing together. There's not a lot of places we do that anymore. Some in spiritual community, you know, the national anthem at football games.
But
something happens. The room shifts when people sing together. And they sing out loud things, words and phrases that touch something deep and human and hopeful. And I wanted to write a song that talked about hope, but not in a greeting card kind of way. You know, there's the kind of hope that's like wishful thinking, and it's kind of greeting card oriented. And then there's like a hope that's kind of gritty. It's like the kind of hope that gets up every morning and chooses to try to make the world just a little kinder place in your own way. And the next morning gets up and does it again. And the next morning gets up and you have been disappointed. And you do it again. It's about the kind of hope that was... I wanted to write about the kind of hope that's faithful, the kind that Niebuhr talked about. Anything worth doing will probably not be achieved in one lifetime, so we are saved by hope. That kind of hope. And it's a harder kind of hope. It's a harder kind of hope to live with, because it's easier to be cynical. I mean, when you're cynical, you're never disappointed. You know?
It's true. You know,
it's like, well, I knew that.
Yeah. It's cowardly in that sense, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's courageous to hope, because when you do choose to hope, eventually, at some point, your heart will be broken. And you will be disappointed, and then you get up and you do it again. Courage. I have this real belief. I mean, when I first started playing music, people will say to me sometimes, "You must be a natural risk taker." You know, to leave the safe and secure like art major thing that you had going.
And you can be rich now.
and go to folk music instead. Just chalk right. them up there, you know. You must be a natural risk taker, and you're a performer. And actually, I started out really shy, a very shy person. I could barely talk to people, you know. But I think that courage has nothing to do with being fearless. I think courage has everything to do with loving something or someone so much that you will do it. You will brave it.
Huh.
with solid feet or shaky knees because you love it that much. And music has always been like that for me. You know, okay, I'm going forward with confident or shaky knees because I love it that much. And the things we hope for, the things we love, we hope because we love it that much. It's worth the risk. You know? So... we do have an audience here, so you could sing along. You've been hoping, right?
Well, we just figure out when to sing along.
And, well, this is part. If not now, tell me when. You try that. If not now, tell me when. It goes like this. We may never see this moment. We may never see this moment. Place and time again, place and time again. If not now, if not now, tell me when. Okay, here's the whole thing. If not now, tell me when. If not now, tell me when. We may never see this moment, a place and time again. If not now, if not now, tell me when. I see sorrow and trouble in this land. You sing that. I see sorrow and trouble in this land. Although there will be struggle, we'll make the change we can. If not now, if not now, tell me when. Here we go. If not now, tell me when. If not now, tell me when. We may never see this moment, place and time again. If not now, if not now, tell me when. And I may never see the promised land. I may never see the promised land. And yet we'll take the journey and we'll walk it hand in hand. If not now, if not now, tell me when. Here we go. If not now, tell me when. If not now, tell me when. If not now, if not now, tell me when. We'll work it till it's done. Every daughter, every son, every soul that's ever longed for something better, something brighter. And it will take a change of heart for this to mend. Can you sing that? It will take a change of heart for this to mend. But miracles do happen, ever shining now and then. If not now, if not now, tell me when. Here we go. If not now, if not now, tell me when. If not now, if not now, tell me when. We may never see this moment, place and time again. If not now, if not now, tell me when. And miracles do happen, every shining now and then. If not now, if not now, tell me when. If not now, if not now, tell me when. One more time. If not now, if not now, tell me when.
exciting to, as a folk singer, to create that experience?
Yes, it is. You know, I really love it. You know, and I love the call and response when that happens. And yeah, there is something just really wonderful. It creates this feeling of community. You know, there's something that happens when you're performing. You know, you send it out. You send something from yourself out. But when it's good, an audience, the listeners, will send something back. You know, they'll send something back. And sometimes they send it back so hard it almost knocks you down. It's that good. But when it's great, in those shining moments, something else enters. And it feels like community. It feels like, yes, that there's three parts to the conversation. That's what it feels like.
Well, Carrie, I feel that this has been a very shining moment tonight. And I want to thank you so much for coming to our space. And thanks to all of you for coming to our space. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been just beautiful having your song here.
Well, thank you.
It's a richer place for you being here.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Okay.